Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So we have the most beautiful love story to share with you. It's the story of Lauren Leopold, and she shares her beautiful story of transformation and self-love. Oh, I loved this podcast.
It is so good. I felt giddy after listening to it. If you're single, or if you have a friend who is single and wanting to find love but struggling, listen to this. Listen to it. It is so inspiring. But even if you're not single and you're not, or you're single, you're not at all interested in meeting someone, it's such an amazing story of transformation. That her understanding of that transformation, her insight, and the things that she looked in her journal to remember the exercise she did with you.
Yeah.
And then also you talking about your memory of like the stages she went through, how she was at the beginning.
Yeah.
The fact that she now today almost finds it hard to remember what it was like to be that version of herself.
I know. Yeah. She really struggled. And we had to, because we were having a chat before we hit record. And I said, do you remember when we first had our discovery call, or when we first started working together? I should say, actually, Lauren is a former client of mine.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, dive straight in.
Because we're so excited.
Oh, God, it is so good. Yeah.
But yeah, she really struggled to remember how she felt. And she was, you know, her self-esteem was at an all-time low. She had such a lack of confidence and was really feeling this sense that she was unlovable, that it just wasn't going to happen for her. All around, her friends were getting married, buying houses and starting families, and she just thought, yeah, that's good for them, but maybe
she really was resigned to the fact that it wasn't going to happen for her.
And she said, you know, some people, maybe it just doesn't happen for some people, and I'm one of those people, and maybe I should just accept that.
It's just, do you know what, it just made me just like think again of the power of our ability to transform our lives.
Yeah.
And it's such a sort of open story of transformation where you really hear the steps. And and what's so good as well is that she talks about like the exercises you gave her and the homework you gave her and how so much of it had her out of her comfort zone. So much of it she did not enjoy the first time she did it, or like, you know, part of the way through she started to. And it just, I think it's just a reminder that with this kind of work, with transformational work, you're not going to enjoy a lot of it, particularly at the start. And, but look at the results you can get. It is such a story of hope. It's so inspiring. And what I also love is how it really brings to life the journey that you take people on. God, it makes me quite emotional. It's so, so good. I would listen to it all over again.
I just, like, this is literally why I love what I do. To see, to be able to witness that transformation is just so fulfilling.
Yeah.
And to spend time with Lauren again, after not seeing her for 3 years, so I hadn't seen her since she finished the program 3 years ago. And then to be sitting in her flat, they've just returned from their amazing wedding in Devon, and her flat is just surrounded by these pictures of her and her partner Tom on their many travels and adventures together, their smiling faces and their dog, and like just their whole home is full of love. And I just thought, oh my goodness, isn't that so amazing to see just 3 years later, she's living this dream that she just did not think was possible for her. And it was so amazing to see.
And it's so, and also just really hearing the courage that it took for her to step up and step into that journey with you.
Yeah.
And to step beyond her limited thinking, because she really was so resigned and just was, and she says herself, was in such a negative place about being single and about it happening for her. But she trusted the process and she joined you on that journey, and she did her homework, even though she didn't want to a lot of the time. And it's not just helped her to find love, it has transformed her. She, like you say in the podcast, that, you know, she met herself, and she agrees, I met myself on this journey. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
oh, wow. I've got goosebumps again.
Oh my God, it's so powerful.
So if Lauren's story resonates with you, and if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, you know what, I'm where Lauren was 3 years ago. I'm also feeling those same feelings. I'm also feeling stuck, and you'd really love some help in your love life, then I just want you to know that change is possible. If you're willing to learn and grow, and you're willing to be courageous and brave and to go on this deep journey of transformation, then I am ready for you to get in touch. And I'm just so excited to see who gets in touch about coaching. If you do want to get in touch, or if you want to hear more about the love coaching that I offer, then head to loveprojectlove.com/love coaching. And for now, enjoy the episode. So a big welcome, Lauren.
Thank you.
To the podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to be our guest today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your real love story. And yours is such a gorgeous one because we went through the Get Ready for Love journey together. And I want to take you back to 2015, wasn't it, when you had decided that you were ready to prioritize your love life, you were ready for the journey ahead, and you got in touch with me to talk about the coaching. We had a discovery call to talk all about where you were at, where you needed help. And I'd just love to take you back there just briefly and for you to tell us how you were feeling at that time in your life, what was going on, and what prompted you to make that call.
Cool. So it's actually quite hard to go back to that, in not for any painful reasons, but because it just feels like it's such a lifetime ago and I'm a completely different person now. Not to sound too cheesy and too cliche, but it feels almost like it's a different person that I'm looking back on. But I've kind of looked back on the emails that we had back and forth back then, and actually it's been really insightful to just see like how far I've come since then. But I mean, I was despondent. I was actually in a relationship when I first called you. We had the call, and I knew deep down in my core that it was wrong for me. It was a very toxic relationship, and I think I sort of said to you that I'm in this relationship. I'm not sure whether I should be in it, and I don't know whether I was looking for you to tell me to get out of it or whatever. But I definitely knew that I needed. I was basically reading a book on attachment. I knew I was just. It was really, really unhealthy, and so I think deep down there was just something propelling me to. I knew I needed to work on myself to either get out of it or make it better. That was taken out of my hands because in the week or 10 days between me speaking to you on the discovery call and us starting coaching, I actually found out he was cheating on me in quite a horrible way. I laugh about it now, but I shouldn't. But yeah, basically we were out shopping one day and his other girlfriend basically came up and confronted us. And it's one of those things that I kind of just not laugh about, but it was one of the best things that ever happened to me looking back. But by the time I came and saw you for my first coaching session, I remember saying to you, well, that's been taken out of my hands now. And actually, I think it was the best thing, because if I hadn't have found that out, I would have stayed in that relationship and I would have wasted the first part of our coaching journey on him and whether I should have been with him. And I wouldn't have got all the great stuff that I would have done with on myself with you. So, you know, I'm a great believer in the law of attraction and the universe and stuff. And I honestly think that was the universe's way of going, get out. And actually now you need to focus on yourself. So, but by the same token, when I turned up to the first session with you, I was in just a completely awful low place because I'd just been cheated on. Even though I was looking back, I was free. It wasn't the kind of freedom I wanted. I had a really, really negative view of being single. I had been single for years. And I mean, I would have the odd boyfriend for like 8 weeks or 3 months, and I'd go on lots of dates and they would never turn into anything. And I was always looking at my other friends who, as they went off and got married, and I was literally like, I remember saying to you, that's never going to be me. I'm going to be crazy cat lady. I never thought anybody would stick around. I didn't think I was worthy of that. You know, I'd actually really come to the quite sad, not realization, but I just thought to myself, it's just never going to happen for me. It doesn't happen for some people, and I'm one of those people. I definitely was hopeful, because otherwise I don't think I would have come to you, but I couldn't see how I was going to get there. I was just, it just seems such a huge mountain to climb, but I'm really glad it happened that way because I was just willing to try anything. And thankfully I had the headspace, the space to work on myself. Whereas if I'd been with him, if I'd been in that relationship, I would have just been focusing on him rather than me. Mm. And that's why I'm so glad that it happened that way.
Mm. I remember, it's really nostalgic actually, just remembering some of our early sessions together, and we were talking about spending quality time with yourself and stillness and being present. And there was such a lack of that in your life at the time. And we set you a piece of homework to take yourself on a date, spend quality time with yourself and not distract yourself with, you know, your phone, laptop or anything else. It was just like really going and being with yourself and meeting yourself. And I remember across the journey, the coaching journey of you sharing how awful it was the first time that you did that and how uncomfortable it was.
It's awful. I mean, I went... like before we did the interview, I thought I'll go back and just look at my, you know, my journals and my emails and things like that. And my God, I mean, there's a journal entry called entitled Breakfast for One. And I think you'd sort of set me some homework that I needed to go and have a meal with myself. And so I picked breakfast because it would be the quickest one. And I remember I went and sat in this cafe next to my house that I'd always go with my friends. And I remember I walked in and I was shaking and I was like, oh my God, everyone's looking at me. I'm such a loser. I can't believe I'm doing this. And then literally over the course of the hour or whatever it was I was in there, I started to feel quite good and quite cool. And because I had my journal and, you know, everything, I felt this stigma started to leave that being alone isn't that bad. And actually after I did one or two things like that, I think I went to the theatre by myself, which again, I mean, that in itself, I remember it being the scariest thing in the world. And now I love stuff like that. It was so foreign to me. I was so afraid of being alone with my own thoughts. Like I literally would wake up in the morning, put some music on, get ready. Then I would leave the house. Then I'd put my earphones in. And I could not walk anywhere without earphones in and having like banging music on. And now it's completely the opposite. I almost crave that stuff. And it's just really strange looking back on. And I just feel a bit sorry for that person that I was, because I was missing out on so much by not having any silence in my life. But it was just such a scary thing to have that silence. It felt a very negative thing. Mm. It felt like I was missing out, or that I was somehow a bit sad and loserish for being by myself and having silence. Mm. It was a really negative thing.
Mm. You did so many things out of your comfort zone.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it was... Yeah, all of it, you know, things like, I was looking back at like some of the exercises you sent me, like smile at random strangers and, you know, make eye contact with people. And how about when you're at the bar next time, you don't look down at your phone, or you're not there looking at your nails, you know, go to the bar without your phone and just look ahead and look around you. And I remember I emailed you back going, oh, Vicky, I've been smiling at people like a mad woman. And like, they all probably, you know, they probably think I'm mad, but it actually feels really good. It feels really awful, but also really good at the same time. And I said, it's really weird. I don't actually remember this, but this is what my email said to you. It's like, oh, and I was standing at the bar and, you know, this guy came up to me. He was 55, but still. He came up to me and told me what a great dress I had on. And it actually felt really good, you know. And it was things like that where I just think, my God, I was such a little broken little bird that to even go and stand at the bar without the comfort of my phone or without my friend coming with me, I just wouldn't have done it. And that stuff is just second nature now. But yeah, coming out of my comfort zone massively, it was every little thing was a challenge. But I just really wanted to try new things. I wanted to try and find out who I was. So luckily for you, I was very open to all your suggestions.
Yeah, you were willing to try, very willing to try new things and get out there and experiment, which is key when you're on this kind of journey. It's not for the faint-hearted.
No, no.
But what I saw in you was just the barriers started to come down. It was like taking baby steps and really going out of your comfort zone step by step. And gradually, little by little, those barriers started to come down. You were able to open up more to love and be vulnerable, spend that time with yourself and really cultivate that intimacy with yourself. And it was just beautiful to see that. And then, and we'll get into your love story in a minute, because we want to hear all about how you met Tom and how things developed and everything else. But I just think it's so important to talk about how you were feeling, and the fact that you thought it wasn't going to happen for you, like it had for so many of your friends. Yeah. And I think so many women today really feel that it's not going to happen for me.
Yeah.
And what you've shared with me before is that when you believe that, you then go out and find evidence out into the world that supports that belief, that kind of warped belief.
Yeah.
And so it feels like everything is confirming that to be true.
I was, when I was with my previous boyfriend, I'm not sort of defending him at all in his actions, but I was acting in a way where I wasn't worthy of love, because I believed, and I'd had a series of failed relationships, that I wasn't worthy of love. I was therefore acting in that way. So I wasn't being my authentic self. I mean, I actually didn't know who my authentic self was. So, I mean, how can you be your authentic self to somebody else if you don't even know who you are internally? But I also was just, I was acting in a, which lots of women do, you know, acting in a very desperate way, like changing my behavior, changing my plans, being available all the time, just, you know, being really too attached, like just constant anxiety. And yeah, as I said earlier, it just feels like it feels like a different person to how I am now, definitely.
Mm. What do you think were the most important or powerful lessons that you learned?
Oh God, so many. It's the age old cliche of like, how the hell are you going to love somebody else how are you going to get someone else to love you if you don't love yourself first? And I didn't love myself. I had a really negative view of myself. Which makes me a little bit sad now, because I just think, God, you know, not everyone's going to wake up every day and think, God, I'm awesome. But there's a definite baseline level of self-esteem that has completely changed. So I think, you know, you've got to spend that time and commitment on, you know, self-love. I mean, it sounds really cheesy, but you've got to spend some time like understanding like who you are, what your passions are, what your boundaries are, what your values are, what you would stand for, what you wouldn't stand for. And just creating that space to do it. I think that's the first one. I think number two, you've really got to that piece around being open to trying new things and pushing yourself into your comfort zone or out of your comfort zone, you know, whether it is going for dates by yourself or going speed dating or, you know, which is a thing I'll talk about later, is going out with people that aren't your type, going completely the opposite way, you know. So really you've got to, if you want to, I don't know what that's, I can't remember what that saying is, where, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same, carrying on doing the same thing the whole time. You've got to be willing.
Different results.
Yeah. You've got to be willing to change things up. And you've got to, I think I was very willing, and because I gave myself the space, or I had the space, you've got to put in a bit of homework as well. Like you can't just sort of turn up every week and expect, you know, you to do all the work for you. You've got to, it's got to be a collaborative thing. You know, the reason you set homework is because you have to start embedding these things into your life. You have to start experimenting. You have to start trying things. And that I think is the key to coaching, as opposed to like therapy or something. It's actually like action orientated. You've got to like, you know, put the work in yourself, basically.
So how were you feeling then when you met Tom?
So we were coming to the end of our coaching journey. I think I probably had like two or three sessions left. So we'd been seeing each other, as it were, for like 3 months or so. And I was definitely in a much more positive place. I think I was going back and looking at the emails that I sent you. I was back on the dating apps, but I was in a much less desperate place than I was before. I remember I said to you something around the fact that I didn't really have time for the apps. And also I didn't, even if I was getting dates, I didn't really have time for the dates. I was too busy. I was busying myself, but in a good way. So I was like either, you know, carving out what we used to call Loza time, you know, where I'd go and do my own things, like my Loza retreats, we used to call that Loza time, you know, where I'd go and do like yoga and,
you know, breakfast by myself and things like that. But also I was getting out with different groups of people and sort of really implementing all the stuff that we discussed. But I was, it's the age old thing. Like everyone says, you'll meet someone when you're not looking. And I genuinely wasn't, I was very half-hearted with the apps. And because I think I was just in a place where I was like, I was much more okay with being single. I think I was never going to be totally happy with it. Like I still always wanted to find a boyfriend, but I was okay for now. And I was realizing it wasn't the worst thing in the world. And so when that bank holiday Sunday, it was the second bank holiday in May, I was going out with my friends and I was actually really hungover. I almost didn't go, but there was something that was like, you know, you need to go. So we went to the Prince of Wales in Brixton to the rooftop and, we just sat there and I was actually genuinely not looking for a bloke, which is very unusual for me. Every time I went out, I would be like a meerkat, looking, which I now look back and I was like, my God, what must I have looked like? You know, but that day, I don't even think I really did my normal makeup routine. I was just like, oh, I'm really hungover. I just slapped some, you know, I was just there with my mates, which I think was the key thing to it. I was just feeling happy with my mates, basically.
There's a principle, and I think it's, I read it in Zen and the Art of Falling in Love.
Yeah.
And they talk about when people go to the Zendo and they go on a retreat, there's this process of meeting yourself on the mat. And I think yogis talk about it as well. And I've really felt that in the early stages of the Get Ready for Love journey, you met yourself.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
You were available to yourself first. And so I feel like you'd really cleared the space to invite in somebody into your relationship space.
Yeah.
And so I know you consciously, you weren't looking like the meerkat, how you used to look for love. But I would say that there was a readiness now.
Yeah, definitely. I was just sort of, I was just open to anything. If you think about it, when I first started, I was just very closed. Everything, body language, language, everything was very negative and very closed. And I remember even, you know, we would do things in the coaching sessions, like standing up and standing tall and talking about posture and body language and things that you just don't realise are so important. Subconsciously, I was probably just being very, very open, even though I wasn't doing my usual meerkat thing, just by being there, my presence was different around people. Mm. Definitely.
Mm. And you were saying that you were smiling at people in the pub.
Yeah.
And something that you'd found really uncomfortable before, but you'd started off just smiling at strangers and really looking up and engaging and connecting with the world around you, again, going out of your comfort zone. And then doing that again in that pub, even though you weren't like this meerkat like you were before and desperately looking for a guy, it was actually, I'm engaging with the world around me. And that was, I think, what you were saying when you met Tom, that you had smiled and looked and made
happened.
Eye contact with him.
Yeah, we were literally, like, we were at the bar in the downstairs bit, and rather than looking down at my phone, I was looking up, and we just caught each other's eye. And then I was like, oh, caught each other's eye. He was quite good looking and looked away. And then basically we went and sat down later on, and he'd wandered around. I know this now because he's told me, but he'd wandered around looking for me. And basically decided his chat up line would be, he'd walk past and he was like, can you stop following me around, please? And I sort of looked up and about to go like, oh, cheesy line. And then I was like, no, he's really fit. Actually, no, I do like him. And then, of course, spent the whole night like looking, where is he? And then eventually we kind of like, I say we like dance walked over on the dance floor where he was with all his mates, you know, that kind of like awkward dance walky thing. And again, lots more eye contact, which again, I would never have done before. Even if I'd seen someone in the pub that I would have liked, I couldn't have looked at them because it was too embarrassing and, oh, they'll not like me and they'll think I'm weird. Whereas I had that confidence to keep looking over and smiling, which was just, again, sounds so simple, but it was something that I just didn't have the skills to do. And after lots of eye contact and not actually any talking, my friend eventually had to be like, guys, you know, introducing each other. And and then we just got talking and I think we had a snog. I can't remember, a bit of a drunken snog. And then he invited all my mates and all his mates back to ours for a big party. And then he said, you know, can I cook you dinner tomorrow? And my first thought was, yeah, right, he's not going to do that, but how lovely, I'll say yes. And he came and cooked me dinner the next day. He turned up with red wine and steak. And then he cooked me dinner. And then he asked me out on the third date. And we went on the third date and a fourth date. And he was my boyfriend. And it was It was. I remember my friend saying to me through all my old early relationships, it's not supposed to be this hard, Lauren. Like, you're not supposed to be this anxious. It when you find it's hard, it's not easy. And I used to think, oh, no, stop, it's a bloody patronising, you know. Not, it doesn't happen like that for everybody. And actually, when it happened, I was like, oh, this is what they were talking about. When you meet the right person, it's just easy because your two worlds collide in the right way at the right time. And there was no awkward, is he my boyfriend? Oh, I don't know. I think we're just seeing each other, which was always my thing. Like, oh, we've been going out for like 6 months, but he hasn't asked me to be his boyfriend, all that kind of thing. This was literally boom, 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 easy. You know, I mean, there was ups and downs, but there was never that anxiety of, I don't know where I am with him, or what does he think of me? And I need to act in this certain way. I was myself with him from day dot. Yeah. I mean, I think there was a couple of blips where my old sort of anxious self would come in, but he sort of found that endearing and funny, and I was able to be really, really vulnerable around him. And I think that was the first time I'd ever been like that with anybody, that showed my actual true self to him, because I didn't know my true self before. So how could I have shown my real self to anybody? So that's why these 3 months or however long it was of being alone and having that space to understand who I was just, it was absolutely key. I don't think I'd have been where I am today if I hadn't have done it.
And did you have any reservations at the beginning? Didn't you think that he was maybe just too nice?
He was too nice, and he was completely not my type. So my yes. type beforehand was your proper Cockney geezer, tattoos, you know, just a bit of a bad boy, probably a DJ. Just they were all the similar kind of person. And not that there's anything wrong with any of those people, if anyone's listening. But that was my type. I had a very, very specific type. And Tom is none of those things. He has a beard. And I know he was a DJ at the time, actually. But he's completely, you know, he's very well-spoken. He's quite proper. He, you know, and he was super nice and super keen and phoned me on when he said he would and stuff. And normally that would have... It did. It started to jar with me a little bit at the beginning, because I was like, oh my God. There was a sort of thing I had in my head, subconscious, where if they were too keen, it was a bit of a turn off kind of thing. And I remember having this kind of discussion with you, you know, in the last few sessions, and you really coached me. You were like, just go with it. Just go with it. If it's making you feel uncomfortable, just see what happens. And I'm so glad I did, because it just goes to show that, you know, the minute you kind of look slightly outside your very narrow field of vision, there's someone there going, hello, hello. But, you know, I could have missed him. If I could have completely easily dismissed him, you know, if I'd listened to my little niggly thoughts in those early stages. But, you know, I went with my gut, which was saying, this is a good un. This is, you know, there was, my gut was really positive about him. It was my head that was going, is he too keen? Oh, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, when something is unfamiliar,
yeah,
there is that sometimes a fear is triggered. Like, this doesn't feel like normal. This doesn't feel safe. This doesn't feel comfortable.
Because I was used to them not calling and not texting. And I was used to them making me anxious and having to have these like real deep and meaningful with my girlfriends about, what does this mean? And should I text him back? And there was none of that. Like, he texted all the time. And I remember, like, God, I look back now, like, you know, the thing on WhatsApp where you can turn it off so that they can't see if you've read their messages. I used to have that. I mean, I used to, the blue tick on the WhatsApp used to be like a major source of anxiety for me. I mean, now I look back and I'm like, God, I just can't believe like a blue tick would cause me that much bother. But it wasn't, but with him, it wasn't like that. And that's because I went for a different kind of person, but also because I didn't feel that anxiety. You know, I wasn't looking to him to reinforce anything in me. I wasn't trying to get him to tell me I was great or anything like that. I already felt like that. You know, yeah. I was still working on myself. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't completely fixed by the time I met him, but I was in a completely different headspace where I had boundaries and I had self-esteem and stuff. And I was saying I suddenly remembered when in the early days when he was trying to get me to cancel my weekly dance class because he wanted to go on a date. And he was like, no, just don't bother going to that. And I remember saying to you, I was like, I feel really strongly that I should still go in this dance class. And you were like, no, exactly. You've worked on these boundaries. And I remember saying to him, no, this is my weekly thing. This is my time and I'll see you afterwards. And it sounds so simple now, but old Lauren would have been like, oh, sure, I'll just give up dancing forever. If you don't want me to do, I'll do whatever you want. I'll just cancel all my plans for you. And I felt very strongly that I was like, nope, this is my time and you will not You will not stop me doing that. Mm. I was just a new improved version of myself, definitely.
There was something that you shared before about attachment theory. Did you identify someone who had more of an anxious attachment? Yeah.
And that's the strange thing now is, so when I was with my previous boyfriend, it was very unhealthy, very toxic. And I was reading this book called Attachment, which is a really great book. And there's like three types of people in it. And I identified myself as an anxious attached, I think. I assumed, and maybe a lot of people do, that that's just who I was. I was always going to be an anxious attached person, whoever I was with, and I needed to change myself, or I needed to get with somebody that was okay with being with an anxious attached person. And now I realize that I was only that person because I was with someone who made me feel that way, if that makes sense. Yes, we both had parts to play in it, but I'm not an anxious attached person with Tom. I'm just not. I mean, there's still anxieties about different things. You know, everyone gets anxious about certain things, but, and it just goes to show that, you know, once you get out of that and you start to work on yourself, you can completely change your way of thinking.
Yeah.
It's possible. Yeah. You're not, it's very easy for people to go, this is just how I am. And yeah. I'm going to be this way forever. Mm. And you can change. And it does. And it totally depends on the people. I'm a big believer in, if not just a toxic relationship with somebody, but you know, if they're toxic friendships, you know, there's people in your life that make you feel bad. And actually, you know, if you can get rid of those and give yourself the space, you don't always have to feel like that.
Mm.
But as I say, it took me to find out my boyfriend was cheating on me outside Spitalfields Market for me to get out of that relationship. So I'm not making out that it's very easy to get out of those relationships. Luckily for me, and I was lucky, it was forced upon me. Mm. And if it hadn't, I might still be in that awful relationship. But you know, if you can give yourself the headspace, you know, that attachment thing is, and I used to see it in a lot of my friends. You know, you would change your behaviors, change your personalities, and that's not what real love is. You know, I've now realized that's what when you can totally be yourself and you're on an even footing, mm. that's what a real relationship is. But I'd never had one before. So I had no frame of reference. So.
And a secure relationship, yeah. where you feel safe and supported.
Totally.
And it really resonates with me because I'd always, previously, my relationships, I noticed a pattern that my anxieties were triggered in my previous relationships because they were not comfortable with intimacy and closeness, and they were more on the avoidant side, yeah. of the scale. And I was then sitting on more of the anxious side of the scale. And I never understood why the relationship that I'm in now was so different. And it's because I am so secure. I have a secure attachment in this relationship.
Yeah.
And I used to think that I would always just feel anxious and be totally preoccupied with the relationship, totally lose myself, didn't do anything for myself. I didn't have hobbies. I didn't have interests that things that I was exploring that were just for me. And this was like you, looking back, I feel like that younger me that, yeah. she missed out on so much because she didn't know what it could be like, yeah. with someone.
You're looking for someone else to fill that void. And then, yeah. But then you fill it with yourself. And then you go into this and the next relationship on a completely even footing. There's no gaping chasm for someone else to fill.
Yeah. Then it's sharing that love rather than looking for someone to fill this void, yeah. and coming from that place of lack.
It's almost like you're like trying to like crave, like trying to like grab love off people. Whereas actually with Tom, it just came to me naturally. There was no forcing it. And I always felt like I was forcing things before or trying to manipulate. Oh, is he, you know, maybe if I do this, he'll feel this way. And maybe if I act this way, he'll say X. And there was just none of that.
Yeah. And you know, that behavior, it just reinforces this idea that I am hard to love.
Yeah.
And I love that as you were sharing, you know, how things developed with Tom and all the momentum that, all the momentum that was around it from the early stages, there was no drama. It just, you know, one date led to another and you just felt at ease.
Yeah.
And feeling like I'm easy to love and you're easy to love.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think there's an element of you know, having meeting the right person. You know, I'm not saying that once you meet the right person and everything's going to be easy, it's, you know, it's obstacle free. Like you said, there were some really difficult times in the beginning because I was still adjusting to this new me. Like, you know, I remember one night he'd said he was going to come over after the pub or after a party or something, and he's going to come over about 11, and by like 12:30 he hadn't turned up, and I was like, oh, here we go. It's been 3 weeks and I knew this would happen. And I literally went like that back into my old self. Oh, here we go. This is it. I knew it. I knew I wasn't worth it. Blah, 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 blah. You know, my shitty committee like got into action. And I sent him a really shitty message going, you know, I'd explained to him, I'd been very vulnerable and told him about my past relationships and, you know, which was a big deal for me. And that really hurt me because I was like, right, he's blowing me out after I've told him all this stuff. And so I sent him this shitty message saying, you know, I expected it from all these other guys, but I never expected it from you. And went to sleep, and then 1:30 there's a knock at the door, and he's like, oh yeah, really sorry, my phone ran out of battery. And I was like, oh shit. And he plugged his phone in, and this message came through, and I was like, oh my god, don't read it. And he read it, and he just laughed. He was like, god, I got a little bit worried, did we, silly, you know. And we just laughed, and we had this like laugh and joke about the I never expected it from you thing, which we still laugh and joke about to this day. And but because he understood where I was coming from and that I'd been hurt in the past, he was able to go like, don't be silly, like I get why you were worried, but my phone had just run out of battery. Whereas before, you know, they would say their phone had run out of battery, but probably they were cheating on me kind of thing. And it was a real, that was quite a hard thing for me to adjust to, like, oh, this guy is going to come over when he says he will, and he will text me back. And, you know, so there was a few little hurdles like that in the beginning. It wasn't completely plain sailing, but every time we got over one, it made it stronger, and it made me feel stronger in myself and in the relationship.
Mm. And then how did things develop?
They developed quite quickly. I mean, we said the L word pretty soon. I think it was, like a month or 6 weeks or something. And I remember at the time it did feel soon, but it also felt right. And I just kept remembering your words, like, just go with it, just go with it, just go with it. And I kept remembering, like, stop trying to put a label on it, you know, just see what happens, see where it develops. But yeah, I mean, we moved in together quite quickly. I was spending all my time at his flat. I think we probably made it official in terms of me moving in there like 4 or 6 months after it happened. But again, it just felt right. And I remember beforehand, before this happened, I would be very judgmental of other people's relationships. And if they moved in very quickly, I'd be like, oh my God, it's so soon. And but I think it was probably based on jealousy, a lot of it as well. And I would be very judgmental. And actually, it was really hard not to judge myself, because I had these standards that, you know, you need to wait a year and you need to do this, and they'd come from nowhere. So I remember thinking, oh, is this soon? Is it not? And I just had to keep telling myself, just go with it, just go with it. It feels right. You know, you feel like this is the right thing. And then, yeah, and then 8 months later, 8 months in, we got a dog. My baby.
Which was on your vision board.
It was on my vision board, yeah, my sausage dog. Yeah, we got a dog, and then we moved into, so basically I moved into his flat for before that, and then we got the dog, and because it's a sausage dog, it couldn't go up the stairs, so then we had to get a flat of our own. And he was speaking very passionately. He said, I really wanted to live in a place that's both ours, which I loved, and again, was very new to me. I was like, whoa, you know, you want something to be mine in a relationship? It's really weird. So yeah, we moved to the flat that we're in now in Balham. We were together 2 years, and then he asked me to marry him even, which was, yeah, just over a year ago now. Which was just the best thing ever. Do you know what? I was going to say it was a surprise. It wasn't. And do you know why? Because at some point pretty early on, I just knew it was going to happen. And that was really weird for me. I think I'd always been in relationships wondering if maybe they might one day love me and they might one day stay with me and they might want to commit to me. Whereas him, I just knew, and it was a very comfortable feeling. So I was just kind of like, yeah, he'll ask me to marry him one day. It wasn't a question. So when he did it, I was obviously surprised, but not in a, oh my God way. It was just, I didn't realize you were going to do it today kind of thing.
I remember you saying you just didn't think that those kind of things happened.
No, it was never going to happen to me.
That it wasn't going to happen like that. You weren't going to get engaged. You weren't going to get married. Like,
no, people like sometimes, you know, fantasize about their wedding day. I just wouldn't, because what was the point? That it was never going to happen. And also, I just couldn't see it. I couldn't visualize it. And I think sometimes you can I could visualize like my career, I could visualize, you know, having a dog, but not a husband ever.
Did anything else surprise you?
Yeah, it still surprises me to this day of the person I've ended up with. He's so far from being my type. I think all my friends were surprised. My mum and dad were surprised. Everyone was surprised because he was just so different to anyone I'd ever hung out with, let alone, you know, gone out with. And I think I surprised myself at how easily I went along with it without all the anxiety. I just let myself go along with it. I had to do a lot of internal talking to myself, a lot of internal coaching, but I surprised myself at how sort of readily available I became for it. And I think doing all those coaching exercises with you where I was like, you've got to feel uncomfortable to move forward, really helped, because it did feel quite uncomfortable in the beginning with him.
But I
just kept on keeping on.
I think the thing that you said about him being too nice will really resonate with people, because I hear this a lot with clients where they think that someone's too nice and it's a problem and it feels so unfamiliar. And if you've had previous relationships where they're full of drama and you never know where you are with them and it really triggers your anxieties, that can become the familiar thing for fancying someone and finding someone attractive. Yeah. and or it's associated with passion and lust.
Yeah.
And I love that you just allowed yourself to be uncomfortable through that process because it was totally unfamiliar to you, and you could have easily just gone, nope, this is too, you know, it feels too uncomfortable for me. Let's go back to my usual pattern, which feels comfortable, even though it's not serving me. And you really allowed yourself to be surprised at who you could be attracted to, date someone who's off type, which is a key lesson in the journey of Get Ready for Love. And and really like changing patterns, changing habits is uncomfortable. And it starts with the awareness first and then making choices, different choices, and the repetition of those different choices and positive actions, and they lead to a different behavioral shift.
Yeah, definitely. It's that whole thing of feel the fear and do it anyway. Like there were loads of times where I was a bit like, oh, I'm not really sure. Like, you know, I mean, he you know, I remember when he told me he loved me, he was the first one to say it, and it was a lovely feeling, but I was totally blown away by it because it was really soon. And my immediate reaction was like, run away. Oh my God. Like, you know, this is completely, completely out of my comfort zone. But I just went with it. And it was, and I'm so glad I did. I really pushed through all of those. You know, there was lots of talking to you. There was lots of talking to my friends about it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to everyone that it was easy. But that would be my one bit of advice, is just like literally just feel the fear and just push through it.
Have you had to work at anything in your relationship?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in the early days, you know, my anxieties were still there. So there was loads of those sort of little blips and things. But also, I mean, the age-old thing of compromise. You know, I think one of the great things about me being on my own and doing all this coaching stuff was that I got quite sure of who I was, and I got some standards and some boundaries, and actually that can almost sometimes go too far the other way, because one of the most important things in a relationship is compromise. And I kind of got to the point where I didn't want to compromise on things. I was like, no, this is me now. I've been on my own for this long, and this is how I do things. So there was a lot of that, which we still work on to this day. But, you know, there's just, I think we also met at a time, you know, I was 36 when I met him and he was 33. So we were sort of going, you know, we were quite big party people when we first met. And I was definitely going through a point where I was like, I'm not sure I want this life anymore. I want to change career. I want to go and explore and try different things. And he wasn't quite there yet. He still wanted to go out and party all night and stuff. So, you know, there was a bit of conflict in the beginning where, you know, I was sort of wanting to move into a different kind of life quicker than he did. But I think everyone kind of goes through that. And actually looking back, I think that wasn't anything to do with us as a relationship. It's just that was a life stage thing, which I see it in a lot of my friends. Everyone kind of goes through that in your mid-30s. But again, you know, I now look, now that we've been able to come through it, we're stronger than ever. And we are, I was sort of saying to you earlier, we are actually, you know, we're not boring now, but we don't really go partying. I said this time last year at the Isle of Wight Festival, and this year we're not. We are, you know, hanging out with our dog, you know, we're reading a lot. Just bought a load of plants for our new garden. And, you know, we laugh about it. We're like, you know, God, we're growing up a little bit. We're looking at houses this weekend to go and buy. And it's just, we, you know, you kind of go on these like little journeys. And actually, I think what's really important to say is we were very, not our relationship wasn't up and down, but I would be up one at some point and he would be down at some point because I'm 3 years, there's a difference in age between us. We weren't always on the same page all the time. And that was actually quite hard. You know, I was, you know, he might be happy in his career and I was really unhappy, or he might be having anxiety about something and I was in a good place. And sometimes that's really difficult. You know, you can't always be happy together. So there's a lot of, you know, you have to become a lot less selfish. And that sounds really obvious, but I was just used to looking after myself and looking out for number one, and actually having to have that compassion and empathy constantly for somebody else is really hard, especially when, you know, like I had, I'd been pretty much on my own for all of my 30s. So I became even more selfish and self-centered, and, you know, and actually having to look after somebody else, look after somebody's thoughts and feelings is quite hard, I think. Not everybody reacts to certain situations or needs the same things that you do. So we did quite early on with one of my other friends who's a coach as well, we did our love languages thing, because we were having a bit of a problem at the time, and he was going through some issues with his career, and I was trying to force him. I was like, you need to get a coach, you need to do this, you need to do this. And he was really resisting everything I was saying, and we came to, it was quite a hard period of our life, and when we did the love languages thing, it was like we realized that we are very different. And at first I was like, oh my God, we're incompatible. What does that mean? And actually it's not. It just means that you deal with life differently. And actually he is, you know, he's a thinker. He goes away. He has to reflect on things. Whereas I make decisions like that. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Fine. Whereas he needs to go away and think about something for months sometimes. And then he'll come around and be like, oh, well, I've just had this great idea. And I'm like, yeah, I gave you that idea a year ago kind of thing. But we know that now, and it's taken, you know, we've been together 3 years and we're still discovering each other. We're still understanding like how the other person works. And it's mind boggling how you can be so different, but get on so well and live together and, you know, live together and sort of work around each other's little idiosyncrasies, you know?
Yeah, I think you do have to take into account the fact that you may communicate love differently. And then quite often we do in partnership. We communicate love in different ways to our partner. But when you realise that, you can see actually they are communicating love, but it's just not, it's not in a language. It's not my mother tongue. It's not my first language, but maybe it's a secondary language I could learn to recognise that is love. It's not the way I give love, but it's the way that they give love. And to see that as love as well is just as important.
Yeah.
But also it could be, you know, recognising that maybe you're an extrovert and he's an introvert. And so the two, and I know this in my own relationship, that you, it's that give and take and understanding that you process things a different way, that, you know, your needs are very different and really honouring your differences.
Yeah, definitely.
So how would you describe your relationship today?
So we are married. We got married 6 weeks ago in Devon and it was beautiful. And we are... People ask me what married life is like, which, again, when people say it, like, oh, you're married, what's married life like? There's part of me, there's the little girl in me that's like, dude, you're married, like, you're such a grown-up. Like, but there's also part of me that it's completely normal and, yeah, I'm married because this is totally going to happen because we've got this relationship now. It just feels very safe and secure. That's the, I would say there's not a massive difference from when we were like engaged or single or whatever, but that is the main thing. It's just this understanding between us that neither of us is going anywhere. And that I was just saying to you actually this morning, we had a row about something and, you know, we sort of cleared our heads. We spent, you know, some time apart afterwards and then we called each other and we were like, hey, sorry. And we're like, yeah, sorry. And see you later. And it was just... That sort of thing would have sent me into a spin 3 years ago. It would have sent me into like, oh my God, what does this mean? And now it's just like, oh yeah, shit happens and we're cool. And it's just that level of security and safety that I feel. And it feels just very still and very happy.
I love it. I just want to share what you sent to me when you got engaged back in 2018, and you had said, "I've learned that love is an inside job, and if you really work at it and become happy in yourself, amazing things can happen."
Yeah,
I love that. True. It's so beautiful. That's really what I see in you. You were so ready. There was such a readiness in you by the end of the program that you were literally radiating love from the inside out. Yeah. And so it's so gorgeous.
People say to me that like my sister-in-law, she'd often say, like, there's just a calm about you now.
Yeah.
Everything is very, like, frantic and frenetic, and you're always very busy. And not that I'm not that anymore. I'm still, like, you know, I've always got lots of things on the go and stuff, but she said, you're just at peace with yourself.
Mm.
And whether that's, I don't know, whether that's Tom or it's me or it's a combination, it's probably a combination of both.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. I feel at peace with life now. Definitely.
I really sense that in you, because I haven't seen you I mustn't have seen you then since we finished the program together, and there's such a sense of calm about you now. It's so gorgeous. There's so much peace that comes from you. And I love, you know, when you were talking about this argument that you had this morning, that you were like, right, take a deep breath, and you went and meditated. Yep. And what I love about your story is that you still use those tools to this day. Yeah. And that's what it's all about. It's about investing in yourself and your love life to create the right conditions for a happy, secure, healthy relationship that will then support you in that relationship. It's not that you just forget about all that you've learned when you reach this perceived goal or milestone. It's not like that.
And don't get me wrong, I mean, there are times when you still lose yourself. Everyone's human, you know, and like I was saying to you this morning, because I've just had knee surgery recently and he's been looking after me. I have no doubt the argument this morning was probably because we were spending too much time together. But there's a realization where we both said, we were like, oh God, I think we just need some space, some time. And by that, I mean, like, he went down to have some breakfast on his own and I, you know, had some space by myself. But we realised that. And that's when I think to myself, right, okay, I need to meditate, or, you know, I might need to go and do some yoga, or I might, you know, it's just that realisation. I'm not saying it's harmonious and you're living in this like brilliant bubble all the time, but it's just recognising when both of you are, or one of you is, you know, having an issue, and knowing what it is that'll fix you. Like, I used to call it with me, with my toolbox, and my toolbox going for a walk in nature, being around animals, going to yoga, taking myself out for breakfast. And I still do all those things. I don't do them religiously, but I know I do meditate religiously, but everything else it's there when I need it to pick and choose. I know exactly what's going to make me feel better, and it's mine and it's for me. Like, don't get me wrong, we'll do things together, but a lot of those things are just for me. And I think that's really, really important in a relationship. I didn't realise, you know, to go off and have your own time. Like, Tom goes off with his mates to go, you know, climbing mountains and stuff, you know, and I'll go and spend weekends with my friends doing, like, well, we'll go to the pubs and things, but we'll do like crafts and things that he hates doing as well. And I think that's so important, because I used to judge people on whether we had exactly the same interests. Mm. And actually, I think it's really important that you don't. Like, he loves golf. I hate golf. You know, go off and play golf. I'll go and do my own thing, you know, and that's one of the healthiest things I've learned as well.
Yeah.
Is spending time apart as much as spending time together.
So what relationship advice, and this is a question that I ask everybody in a real love story interview, what relationship advice would you give to your younger self with the wisdom and knowledge that you have now?
Oh God. I would say, just get to know yourself first. Don't think that any guy out there or any person out there is gonna make you feel whole. You have to do that yourself. So what I said, it's an inside job. So it may sound cheesy, but you've got to learn to love yourself and to know yourself, and to just be open to opportunities, and don't worry. Like, why are you trying to rush things? Like, everyone says this, but everything will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end.
I love that. My next question is, what advice would you give to someone who's on their own journey of dating and finding love? Would it be the same advice?
Yeah, similarly. I mean, I can't recommend your coaching highly enough. But even without that, I think there's just an element of I know it's really hard, but just don't give up. It's really easy to become the person that you think you are. Like I said, I became that unlovable, unworthy, always going to be single. And if you're not careful, you start projecting that to the world. And it's really, if you can try and get out of that mindset, and even if it just seems the most bizarre thing in the world, keep telling yourself, you know, the good things are going to happen to me. Mm. Why couldn't marriage happen to me? You know, why not? It's just trying to change those negative beliefs, which I'm not saying is easy. It was a really long, hard job for me, but it was totally worth it. So I would just say, like, just stick at it. And you just got to put the work, rather than putting work into dating apps and trying to be who you are to other people, put the work into yourself.
Mm. I love that positive message of not giving up, because I think so often people can. They can just give up and think that this is just the way life is.
Yeah, I did. I was just, this was, and I almost got okay with it. I was like, well, you know, I'm sure my friends will get divorced eventually and then we can all be single again. You know, it was those kind of thoughts I was having. And it was, which is not okay. You know, everybody has a right to feel positive about the future, you know, and it just sort of breaks my heart that I never did. So, I would just say, just really don't give up and just keep believing that it can happen.
Mm. Thank you, Laura. And I just think your story is so inspiring, and it's been an absolute honour to witness from the day that you made the day that you emailed him, the day that we had the call together all those years ago, to sitting here today in your flat that you have with Tom, that's covered in photos, just like, it's just gorgeous and so full of love in here. The dog bed's over there. We've got photos of all your trips and adventures all over the wall. And it's just, I just feel... my heart is very full sitting here with you today, and I just hope that your story is going to inspire other people that are also where you were a few years back, and for them to know that it can change, you can change, and to not give up.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode, and if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes, and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever. Thank you.